caught on video. A cop punching a young woman after confronting two women for jaywalking. The Seattle Police Officers Guild says one of the women shoved the officer and his actions were justified. The civilian-led Office of Professional Accountability is investigating. Heisman Trophy winner turned NFL star Reggie Bush telling his alma mater he's got their back as USC appeals sanctions for violations that span Bush's trophy-winning season. The NCAA concluding he wasn't eligible to play. Bush telling reporters at the New Orleans Saints training headquarters today he has no fear of losing his Heisman and will fully support USC's appeal. The Dow down 13 points. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and on today's broadcast, we're going to talk about some of the issues related to the oil crisis that is taking place in the Gulf. Now, a lot of our listeners will be aware that last night, the President of the United States, President Barack Obama, had his first Oval Office speech, and in that address to the nation, he was specifically trying to show that he was dealing directly with the growing environmental and economic crisis that is taking place in the Gulf of Mexico. However, as I've been listening to a number of the reactions from this speech and a number of even before the speech was given, I was listening to a number of the pundits talk about what they were expecting in the speech and what would ruin the speech if they heard these certain elements in it. I noticed that this morning that really the president is taking a tremendous deal of criticism about the speech. They're from the left and from the right. Both sides just wondering what in the world he was trying to achieve in the speech last night, especially by speaking so much about the idea of cap and trade and about climate change legislation that's currently stalled in Congress. And so here's just a couple of the statements that were heard this morning, or actually this appeared last night, but I listened to them this morning, some of the audio files. Keith Olbermann and Chris Matthews from MSNBC, certainly not a bastion of conservative thinking. In fact, if you remember right, Chris Matthews was the one who talked about the idea of his leg tingling when he thought about the Obama presidency. You know, he was mocked quite a bit, I guess, for that particular comment, getting chills up and down his spines as he thought about all that the president, then candidate Obama, was hopefully going to bring to the office of the presidency. Well, he blasted the president's address yesterday, both Olbermann and Matthews. Here's a couple of the quotes that both of them participated in. One said, quote, "It was a great speech." This is Olbermann speaking on this one, but he said it was a great speech if you were on another planet for the last 57 days, unquote. Another one said that nothing specific at all was said. Another comment, no direction. Another comment here says, "I don't think he aimed low. I don't think he aimed at all. It's startling." Still another, "I don't sense any executive command." And so you can just hear in all of these statements that were made there. In fact, I may play that audio for you later in the broadcast. But here was just all of these different statements being said by those on the far left, really, in the media outlet, giving these types of critiques of the speech last night. Here's one from the right. This is from the Heritage Foundation. They wrote this morning, quote, The president has been using the oil spill to push cap and trade and quote-unquote clean energy investment forward, but global warming legislation placing caps on carbon dioxide emissions would do nothing to improve cleanup or to prevent future spills. It would distract from the very efforts to clean up and to stop the oil that must be a top priority now. Nor would emission caps magically create new problem-free sources of alternative energy. Instead, global warming legislation would raise energy costs for all Americans and kill much-needed jobs, unquote. And so here's just a little bit of what's being said in the news this morning, and I just wanted to bring you up to speed on that before we bring in our special guest today. Our special guest is Jamie Dean, and Jamie is the news editor for World Magazine. Jamie's been with us before, talking about the issue of the Gulf. She wrote the cover story for the most recent edition of the World Magazine, which talked about the oil crisis. And so I wanted to get her perspective today on what she thought about the president's speech last night. Jamie, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, what did you think there, Jamie?
Well, I agree with a lot of your review just now, actually. You know, the speech was somewhat light on specifics, but the specifics that were there were troubling, I think, as you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the president talked about the cap and trade legislation. He actually was very careful to not specifically use the words cap and trade. That is a controversial piece of language.
Mm-hmm.
But he did hail the bill that the House passed last year, and that bill certainly contained a cap and trade program. So we know that's in the mix, whether or not he said that. And like you said, that really has nothing to do with stopping the spill now or cleaning up the spill now. It really is and disingenuous link, many people would think. Even you mentioned some folks on the left, even Dianne Feinstein from California, a very liberal Democratic senator from California, said last night, the climate bill isn't going to stop the oil leak. So the first thing you have to do is stop the oil leak. So even some of the president's political allies are saying, look, it's really unfair to link those two things. So I think that was a big problem for a lot of people. Also, the president very much skimmed over this deep water moratorium that he's placed, this moratorium on drilling in deep water. And that is very, very problematic for the Gulf Coast. I mean, again, bipartisan opposition to that, really. In fact, the administration really kind of justified that moratorium by saying that scientists from the National Academy of Engineering had reviewed the recommendation, had essentially approved it, and those scientists later said, that's just not true. They said, we read that report before the administration put in a recommendation for a moratorium. And then they said, and we don't agree with the ban. They said, you know, it's not going to reduce the risk measurably enough to justify the cost that it will be to the Gulf Coast. And when it comes to that cost, you know, Senator Mary Landrieu, who's a Democrat from Louisiana, said that ban could impact about 330,000 jobs in Louisiana alone. That's about 13% of that state's workforce. So, you know, it's hard to say that the what you'd gain out of that moratorium is really going to make up for what you are definitely going to lose. So, again, you know, I would sum up my reaction to that speech by saying, you know, the president feels like he has to do something, but he's responding with a lot of long-term sweeping policies that may end up doing more damage than good in the end.
Mm-hmm. Just a number of thoughts going through my mind, so I'm going to try to just move through the speech a little bit slower just so that we can touch on a number of these things in the half an hour that we have with you. But in the statement that was made, now famous statement, I may not be quoting it exactly accurately, but Rahm Emanuel's statement about not wasting a crisis and about seeing crisis as an opportunity to push forth your agenda. Now that that cat is out of the bag and that it's become a common knowledge and a common statement that we hear over and over again, it really does make the president's efforts on a lot of these things, the word you just used, disingenuous. that when he makes that transition now to pushing legislation in the middle of making statements about a crisis, immediately it feels as if he is politicizing a crisis and trying to get political points somehow out of the crisis. Do you sense that as well?
Oh, I think definitely so. And, you know, the irony of it, I think, is that the president really campaigned on being able to kind of fix all problems. I mean, you know, he really set himself up as this figure who could solve all ills, or at least propose that the government could solve all ills, and that, you know, perhaps a crisis was a good time to push some of that forward. But I think what this crisis is showing is that the government can't fix all ills, and that a crisis is not the appropriate time to push through unrelated legislation. And so I think that that's a kind of a difficult lesson to be learning now for all of us, especially for people who supported the president. You know, I think it's worth noting that, you know, no one is saying that the president has some special power to stop this thing from leaking.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, the government can't fix everything, and so now that that is being clearly shown, it's becoming a very difficult political point for the president to deal with.
Mm-hmm. You know, they mentioned about taking advantage of these crises as an opportunity for something. I thought last night that he really blew a big opportunity to have a bipartisan solution to this problem. I think that there was momentum for Republicans and Democrats, for people just to drop the labels and to say, look, we're Americans. It was one of those rare moments where people are willing to somewhat set aside these things. There's always some little political element in it. But I think that, you know, I really think he could have rallied the American people, that they just want to see this spill cleaned up. They want to see the hole plugged. They want to see, you know, things put in place to make sure that stuff like this doesn't happen again. But because of switching to cap and trade and adding that element, rather than taking the advantage of the bipartisan momentum that this issue was starting to have, he immediately interjected now partisan politics for another piece of legislation that is very unpopular, just like health care turned out to be afterwards. We don't have the money to do it, and all of these types of reasons why this wasn't a good idea. But do you see that he really missed a moment here?
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, you could almost hear the groans from both sides of the aisle, especially from Democrats who know that that is a very unpopular piece of legislation to begin with. So why bring that into the mix now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Oval Office address is typically reserved for very serious crises, and this is a very serious crisis. But, you know, past presidents have used the Oval Office address to address things like the Cuban Missile Crisis or the 9/11 attacks. You expect in a moment like that it is going to be a unifying moment, that the president is going to try to bring together people for some kind of unified solution if that's possible, and we just didn't see that last night. And I think that that's probably as disappointing to Democrats as it is to anyone.
Mm-hmm. You know, just a couple other thoughts about just the general feel of the address last night. As you mentioned, the Oval Office address is reserved for these types of, you know, national crisis situations. And, you know, it could have had that feel, again, if he wouldn't have gone into the legislation portion of it. But there were a couple other things. First of all, when it first started, I thought the introduction to it was very clunky, him getting into the to talking about this particular subject. He kind of threw an odd comment to a couple other large crisis situations that we face, the war and the economy and these types of things. Just one or two statements that way, and then in a very hurriedly manner, then got right into the issue. So I thought that it was clunky. I thought he didn't look relaxed. I thought he was out of his element, and, you know, he just looked uncomfortable in this type of a setting. And all of this, to me, comes into bear upon the entire idea of that there is really a crisis of competence. that right now we're understanding that votes are or opinion polls have been taken about comparing the response of this administration with the response of the previous administration with Katrina. And the most recent polling I saw from the people in that region, that they feel that Bush's response to Katrina was better than Obama's response to the Gulf spill. Now, that's really saying something, I think, politically, when he has gotten to this level, you know, 58, I think we're 58 days now or something into this bill. Do you see the tremendous political ramifications here for the president?
Oh, I think it's devastating for him. And you know, I think that a lot of people sort of call this alarm before this spill ever happened. You know, when Obama was running for the presidency, a lot of people were questioning what is his experience
exactly.
in managing things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had however you feel about Bill Clinton or however you feel about George Bush, both of those men managed whole states. I mean, they had experience managing things, and that was part of what they campaigned on and brought to the table. And so Obama just didn't have that kind of experience. So this is a massive and complicated catastrophe to manage, and I think we're seeing that in some ways he's not up for that task because, you know, like I said, he can't personally stop the oil leak. That is true. But what we're hearing from the Gulf Coast about the immediate response to the spill is a lot of frustration from people on the ground who say that this thing is just not well coordinated, that the coordination between the federal government and between BP and between, you know, rescue crews or cleanup crews, I should say, is just not good. And so why spend so much time trying to do these big, huge, sweeping things like a climate change legislation when you have people on the ground in Alabama saying, we need more boom right here, right now?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the failure, I guess, to take care of some of those immediate logistical issues, I think is really going to hurt him for a long time.
I totally agree that the common denominator of what we're seeing here, I always try to, you know, look for what is the thread running through a lot of the things that we see taking place. And I think the common denominator, as you just put your finger on it there, is the idea of the lack of experience that I heard some of the pundits talking this morning, actually against somebody on the left, saying that had he been a governor or somebody with that type of experience, executive experience, then he would have known better about how to handle a crisis like this. And it was just ironic when they were saying those comments because, of course, they have gone out of their way to mock Sarah Palin, who was a governor and did have some governor and executive experience as a governor. But here we're seeing, you know, 15 different agencies, I think, are down there. And like you're saying, there's a tremendous amount of confusion as to who really is in charge. I guess these 15 different agencies that are there, that they all have veto power. And so nobody is quite sure who is the person that can override all of these things and actually get something done. I think that the knee-jerk reaction that we have seen from the president, first of all, shutting down all the oil rigs that are there and stopping any more drilling, and then showing anger in the way that he did, even to the point of cursing, you know, on television, demonizing BP. All of these speak to me about that we are seeing in vivid color on-the-job training, executive training taking place, unfortunately, in the middle of a very, very serious crisis that he really doesn't know how. As a community organizer, he knows how to agitate and do things like that, but really doesn't have this executive understanding of things or skills to bring to the table in order to deal with this. So do you think that that's the unifying theme that we see across the board here?
Yeah, I do. I mean, obviously, it's an enormously complex job that he has, and it does take that mixture of being able to balance a big picture view with nitty-gritty details. And I think the nitty-gritty details part is where he's really kind of failing at this point. And that's, you know, disappointing, I know, for people on the Gulf Coast. And some of the confusion, I think, that you're talking about who's in charge, has been created by the president himself. You know, early on he came out and said, well, the buck stops here. You know, we're responsible.
Right.
We're going to fix this. And then the next day he said, well, we've got our boot to the neck of BP, and we're going to make them fix this. And you know, whichever one you want to pick, pick one,
mm-hmm.
or you know, but make a clear statement about who is in charge and who is whose responsibility is this. I mean, you almost got the feeling the buck stops here if we get this fixed quickly, but it's not.
Yeah.
And BP is on the hook. I mean, you know, I don't want to impugn his motives, but
right.
You don't know why, you know, we're getting both sides of the story this way. So
mm-hmm.
It's confusing for everyone, I think.
I was listening to T. Boone Pickens speaking last night, and he was saying that, you know, his comment, he was asked for his comment about the president saying that he was going to, you know, give it to BP today, you know, when they came in for the meeting. I think they're still in their meeting now, although I heard this morning that the meeting was only 20 minutes long initially. But anyways, that he was, you know, going to take it to BP today, and he was going to set the record straight with them and all of this. Well, I think, again, the president is trying to show through some sort of conjured up anger or something in demonizing BP that he's using these types of things to say that he's in control. But really, at this point in time, he needs to be able to work with BP. They have the experience to be able to deal with this issue, more so than anybody else does anyways. And, you know, he needs to work with them and not demonize them and alienate them during this process until that hole is plugged and the cleanup is done. And so I think he's taking exactly, and T. Boone Pickens was saying the exact same thing, that this is what he thought, that what would he be yelling at him for? At this point, you want to be working together with them and saying whatever resources we need, let's get this taken care of, and then go on afterwards. And so I saw that as just him ranting and raving, but he's losing his credibility on these issues. Nobody's buying it anymore, you know, that this is good enough just to have him show anger. What do you think, where do you think we go from here? He made some startling claims last night. You know, he even said that within the next few days that 90% of the oil would be contained. I think that's really putting yourself out there. I don't see that happening at all. He then talked about, you know, if we pass cap and trade, only if we do it now again. Here's this urgency again. If we do it right now, he even made the statement that would have millions of new jobs that would be associated with the climate bill. These types of statements, what do you think about those?
Well, I think that most people aren't going to buy them, quite frankly. I think that when members of his own party don't buy them, he's got a real problem. And when especially liberal members of his party don't buy them, you know, I just don't think that bodes well for that effort. I think that Democrats may try to pass some form of an energy bill without cap and trade. They may try to pull that out and pass some other things and then maybe add cap and trade in later. But I would be surprised if they really push for that this year as the president is asking them to, because I think that they're probably wise enough to see the handwriting on the wall themselves, that the president has just really lost a lot of credibility with how he's responding to this. And like we've been saying before, using this crisis for things that seem almost to have nothing to do with this crisis. I mean, it's very perplexing to a lot of people. So I think it's going to be hard for the president to get a lot of support for any kind of specific plan that he may lay out in the weeks ahead.
And we only have another minute or two with you, Jamie. I know you got to go, but would you just put cap and trade in a nutshell? What are we talking about with cap and trade? Taxing emissions and so forth?
Right. I mean, you know, for instance, a factory or a company would have a cap on how much carbon they could emit, and if they went over that cap, they would have to either pay a tax or trade carbon emissions with other companies in order to stay below the cap. So what that essentially does is it ends up raising costs for that company, and passing on rising energy costs to consumers as well. I mean, I think that's probably a very simplistic but nutshell way to describe it.
So passing on the cost, but also it sounds like a bureaucratic nightmare trying to keep track of emissions and who's got how many numbers of carbon credits to trade. You know, I gave that up with baseball cards many years ago. thank you, Jamie, for taking the time out to bring us up to speed on what you're doing there at World Magazine. And again, thank you very much for your work there and visiting with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Okay. That was Jamie Dean. Jamie is the news editor for World Magazine. By the way, I still have a link out on my website at knowingthetruth.org, and you can go there and click on the link. You get 74% off the cover price of World Magazine. We're going to go to the phone lines as soon as we come back from the break. We'll take a very quick, just a few-minute break here, and then we'll pick up the phone lines and hear what you have to say about the president's speech last night. What did you think about it from an evangelical perspective? What do you think? Is he really fulfilling the responsibilities, or is he way off base? We'll talk about it in just a few minutes.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Everyone knows a family in crisis with a troubled teen. Licensed to Parent with Trace Embry, formerly serving hurting families, is a radio ministry designed to help you navigate the tumultuous preteen and teen years. Join Trace, the director of Shepherd's Hill Farm, as he discusses the issues your family struggles with. Although Serving Hurting Families has a new name, Licensed to Parent with Trace Embry, our content remains the same, as does our broadcast times, Thursday at 12:30 p.m. and Saturday morning at 11 on Christian Talk 660.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Speedy B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Speedy B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Speedy B's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Speedy B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Are you struggling to make mortgage payments on your property? Have you tried to refinance and got turned down? Is your balloon mortgage payment about to come due and you're afraid to lose your property? Do you think foreclosure is inevitable and there's no way around it? There is a better way. Residential or commercial loan modifications. Just call the Center for Sound Consumer Advice for your free guide. Thousands of businesses and homeowners were able to modify their commercial loans, so you can too. Now beware, not every company claiming to be able to modify loans is worth your trust or the center's approval. Call the Center for Sound Consumer Advice at 1-888-808-5491 for your free consumer protection guide. Find out who you can trust with your commercial and residential loan modification. Call now 1-888-808-5491 and get a free consumer protection guide. Don't let the bank dictate what you do. Get your free guide for residential or commercial loan modification companies right now. Call 1-888-808-5491.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and we've been talking today just about the crisis of competence, if you will, that is taking place in our government right now, specifically with the leadership responsibilities for the President of the United States. And we're doing so in light of the President's speech last night. Of course, the President gave his first Oval Office address, I think by many interpretations and translations of what was said during that address, both from those on the left and on the right, that the speech has been weighed in the balance and found wanting. It just did not come across as being the commander-in-chief leading the country. It came across as being partisan. It introduced items such as cap and trade and other things like that that had no place in the speech at this particular point. We're dealing with the crisis in the Gulf, and we're looking for leadership from the president. And unfortunately, I think the general consensus across the board is that there is a failure of leadership taking place. Now, we made the point a few minutes ago that this was exactly what the critique was of Barack Obama before he came to office, that he didn't have the proper amount of executive experience to hold that job. Now, that's important from an evangelical perspective, that many people bought into the rhetoric of Barack Obama and what he was saying, but refused to see that it wasn't demonstrated, that he didn't have the demonstrated skills, and people were willing to overlook that. Now we're going through what I would term as on-the-job training here about how to handle a crisis, and we'll see just what this is going to cost us now that this decision has been made. Not saying, as Jamie was saying, that the president is able to fix all the problems that we face in this world. I don't believe that, but this particular administration has really upheld government as being the answer to many of our problems. And so by their own admission, by their own press, if you will, their own press statements, we're holding them to the standard of what they have put forth that government should be able to do. Let's run to the phone lines very quickly. We've got Gene from Berea, I think, Greenville, anyways, Greater Greenville area on line three. Gene, welcome into the program today.
Yes, thank you. The commentary regarding Obama's executive experience, or lack thereof, is certainly an obvious component to his failure to measure up or to meet the challenges. But don't forget, we had Jimmy Carter, who had a very impressive resume, Navy, nuclear engineer, governor of Georgia, and he turned out to be an abysmal failure. I think the major component here that we failed to look at as Americans voting for this man Obama was his worldview, his ideologies. Yeah. And most folks were caught up, if you will, and his antics of celebrity, and not the substance of his of the background of his education and even the psychology that emerged in the man who was born under the parental circumstances that he grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the real factor in all this. And while I kept promoting this whole view, I warned people I was called a racist in the process, which doesn't bother me at all. But
mm-hmm.
we are now sowing the seeds of our ignorance, if you will.
Yeah, reaping the consequences of it. I would even go further than sowing the seeds, you know, that we're reaping the consequences of it, because now we're sitting here and watching this unfold. And I know a lot of people do speculate. You know, I said that it was a crisis of competence and all of those things, but there's a lot of speculation as to just if some of these things aren't more scripted than that. For instance, with their statement about the fact about not wasting a crisis, could that have been part of their thinking in being so slow to respond to this crisis?
Well, because they were measuring everything, yes.
Exactly.
They're weighing what can we do to manipulate this?
Well,
yes.
Weighing the outlet, and if it does create a crisis, it becomes an impetus then to push these green mm-hmm. mandates upon people and to use this then to say, see, you know, we wouldn't have this problem if we had wind and we had solar and all of these different energy sources, none of which can sustain are really viable at this point. But
there's another aspect to this, too, that needs to be noted, and that anybody who comes out of a highly secular education, largely with law degrees and liberal arts degrees, in my experience in interacting with these folks, both on social and political issues, is that really they have no full appreciation for the science and technology, its power and its limitations, and Barack Obama mirrors that.
Of course, coming out of Harvard. Well said. Well, thank you, Gene, for your comment. We really appreciate it. Thanks for pointing to that element. Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Ron's been waiting patiently on line two. Ron, what's on your mind today?
Well, you know, there's a couple things. One is, so it's known that there were many offers to get equipment by other countries in order to contain this thing when it started.
That's right.
The question is, why weren't they taken up? Is there something there that somebody's trying to hide? I'm only presenting the question. We have seen so many lies and stuff coming across. I think we need to ask that question. And to be quite frankly, we need to ask it about every administration anyway.
Well, let me address that before you go further. I did read a little bit about the subject of the equipment that was not brought in. And basically what the items that I read about are stating is that they were unable to override a lot of the bureaucratic red tape that is necessary to receive that type of help from other countries. So it is a problem with the administration itself, and like you pointed out, other administrations as well. But here was another failure, that here we are at a crisis mode. We need this equipment in a hurry, but there are so many levels of bureaucratic red tape involved that this has slowed down and really wasted a lot of time while we're waiting for this equipment to be brought in. So good point, Ron. Go ahead with your second one.
Well, there's also the issue that was federal waters, and the president had powers that other types of situations like Katrina where he wouldn't have had powers. So, I mean, these things have to be questioned, and we're so far into this.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't anything started at least to knock that down and with presidential powers in a situation like this?
Right.
But the other question comes into play, is this a matter of not being able to manage or organize? Because the whole health care thing, the way that was pushed through,
was
calculated. It was well managed. It ran roughshod over the Constitution and over the screams of the people. So the question is whether or not this is actually a really tricky way of managing things according to the agenda and the end that the president wants.
Well, I think, too,
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, Ron, that I think that aspect about, you know, everything that took place with health care and these other issues, one of the things is that the president spends so much time on these other agenda items that he has. You know, for instance, he's been in the office now for, what is it, the year and a half or more, and now he's complaining that the MMS department, you know, the materials management group that was supposed to be overseeing a lot of these oil rigs, the government approval side of this thing, that this thing was in a mess, you know, that it was, they were just rubber stamping things, you know, they've got these documents, these contingency plans that were basically just Xeroxed copies for all of the different oil companies that are out there. And they have in there the contact information for certain people that are no longer alive. And one of them has in there how to deal with walruses or something. Of course, there's no walruses whatsoever in the Gulf. And so they could see that these things were just rubber stamped. But I think that how this goes back to the administration is here he was fooling around with other things, like he pushes up on the agenda something so radically important as don't ask, don't tell. You know, he's fooling around with something like this that's not important, that he has no business messing with. He's fooling around with trying to get the terrorists moved out of Guantanamo Bay and brought into New York City to be charged, and about reading them their Miranda rights, rather than concentrating on the essential issues that should have been worked on and concentrated on. So I see it as a problem with priorities, like you're pointing to. He's got his own agenda of things that he is pushing, but that agenda is not necessarily lining up with the important issues that are facing our country.
Yeah, and I think that's correct. My thing is, in thinking about this, is simply that, is it calculated that he's doing it in this way?
I don't know.
The healthcare issue and the way that was pushed through was all calculated. So, you know, this type of, it's just, well, even in the speech yesterday, you could hear that it was nothing more than a lot of rhetoric, totally cutting off the true living God. There's no, it was just totally, you know, we can do it attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So his thinking is way out there. And I have to ask that question. I can't read the man's mind, but
right.
Was it calculated that these things, that he he just said, well, you know, I'm going to let that go because I can use this in the end. And meanwhile, well, I'm going to be pushing these other things out there in order to get people's attention. That's
well, that was the point that I brought up when Jamie was on that, you know, she talked about it being disingenuous. But I said that one of the reasons why we see these statements made by him as being disingenuous is because they have, it's been revealed the way that they look at the crisis, that they think that these crisis situations are wonderful times, that they're opportunities to advance their agenda. Well, now that, like I said, now that that cat is out of the bag, we know from their own statements, this isn't us, you know, attaching these types of motives to what they're doing without any reason to do it. These are their own statements that they want to use a crisis situation in this way. I think that that gives us some level of justification then to ask, are you doing that with this crisis? And that's why I was saying maybe that's why there was such a slow response, was to allow the crisis to develop somewhat, and in developing it to then be able to demonize big oil, to demonize BP, and then to use that as a platform to say, to mandate these new green technologies, of which he admits himself he doesn't know where we're going with these green technologies. He said it last night. He's not quite sure where the end of the road is for that or what it's actually going to look like, but nevertheless he wants to throw billions upon billions of dollars at it to get us to where he's not quite sure we're going. So
we're kind of on the same page then. Didn't hear you say that.
Yeah, well, I think, Ron, that the bottom line to all of this is there really is a crisis of competence. You know, that the competence that he has is showing itself that he just has an agenda that he is pushing, and he's using events to further that agenda. Now, I say that just looking, you know, with a jaundiced eye towards what's taking place and trying to analyze what's taking place, but that is certainly what it appears. And that is not helpful to the country. It may be helpful to his agenda, but it is not helping the country. The country is being ruined in the process.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And that's where I'm hoping, my hope is that in November that we're going to be able to put quite a bit of a stop to most of this, that as the country is waking up and seeing who it is we put in office and what sort of agenda he has, that, you know, we'll be able to pretty much make him a lame duck because we will be able to vote against many of the things that he's going to try to push through. So thank you for your comments today, Ron. Really appreciate it. Okay, well, let me go ahead and take a commercial break. We'll take our last commercial break. If you want to get in on the conversation or give your opinion of what you think is taking place today, trying to be just honest about our assessment, trying to look at these things, you know, from a perspective of not impugning their motive unless we have reason to do so from their own comments, but just looking at what is taking place in our country from a perspective, an honest perspective. And we'll continue to do that when we come back from the break. You can participate in the program today, 1-888-660-WLFJ. We'll be back in just a couple moments.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Your comments are always welcome on Christian Worldview Today.
I mean, it's economic common sense. You cannot get yourself out of economic hole that you dig yourself into by digging it deeper and spending more money. Unless you can actually prove the theory works that you can dig all the way through to China.
Yeah, that's right. Because that's how far we'd have to dig to get out of this mess, Sean. The bottom line, it's about curtailing our freedom.
Weekday mornings from 7 to 9 on Christian Talk 660.
Up until the age of 6, I thought my name was Worthless Brad, because that's what the people in the home I grew up in always called me. So, as you might imagine, I was a little surprised when I moved into a new home and found my given name was Moron. Then I hit high school and discovered that my name had been changed again to Loser. Last week, I accepted Jesus Christ into my heart. I prayed and asked that He would give me a home and a new name, one that I could keep forever. He suggested hope. Yeah, I answered. That's it. I can live with that.
When you come to Jesus Christ by faith, you receive hope and a new life. To begin a relationship with Jesus Christ, call us at the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, toll free at 866-JESUS-CARES, or click billygraham.org.
Brooke Ellison is a surprising person.
When I was 11 years old, I was hit by a car, and no one expected me to live.
She surprised people by living.
I had been paralyzed from the neck down and on a ventilator since that time.
And she surprised them by going to college.
Tomorrow, I will graduate from Harvard.
Determination. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Well, welcome into the last segment of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. We've been talking about what I've termed for the title of the broadcast today, A Crisis of Competence. The way that the government is handling the current crisis that we see taking place in living color out on our television sets on a daily basis. They're counting down the days. You remember when the Iran crisis was taking place, where the hostages were there in Iran? Every day they would say, this is day number day number 50 or 100 of the crisis that is taking place with the hostages. Well, they're doing the same thing now with this particular crisis. And every day you see on the news over and over again, number of different angles and different broadcasts talking about this crisis. Well, it's starting to have a very dramatic political effect, which is ironic because one of the reasons that Barack Obama was able to really ascend in the popularist message was his ability to caricature the previous administration, George Bush, with his lack of competence. This was something that he attached to the Bush administration. Bush gave him a lot of help in this area, but he was able to attach that to him, that he was incompetent, that they were out of touch, that they really couldn't deal with problems that were coming up on the horizon, and they used that in order to really gain the tremendous amount of support that they had for Barack Obama's presidency. And it worked, and he won the presidency, he won the election, and was voted in with high numbers related to the election. But now, all of the concerns that we had about Barack Obama, that one of them being that this was a man with an agenda, that this was a man that had a very liberal agenda, maybe one of the most liberal and far-reaching liberal agendas in our country's history, these types of statements and his lack of actual executive experience, these were two of the main themes that were coming up over and over again about this presidency. Well, when we look at what is taking place, the thing that we have greatly feared has come upon us. This is what is taking place before our very eyes in our government. And so we see that in a number of different ways, there is this failure of ability to lead the country in the right direction. The recent news, recent polling that has taken place for Barack Obama has his approval rate now at the lowest that it's ever been. I think the one I saw this morning was at 42% of the people feel that the president is now doing a good job. And so his record and his credibility with the American people is plummeting during this crisis that's taking place in the Gulf. Well, one of the solutions that he's trying to push in the middle of this, and this is what angered so many people with his speech last night, left and right, was that in the middle of it, he tried to push something called cap and trade and these new green mandates. So rather than just dealing with the problem that at hand, he spoke about the idea of, you know, this would be a great time. In fact, the only time. We must do it right now if we're ever going to do fix this problem. We must right now fix the idea that we're not throwing enough money at these clean energy solutions. Well, people didn't buy it on the left or on the right. They don't believe that in the urgency that he's talking about. They don't believe that this is the right time to do this at all, that we're in a crisis economically in the country. The country is about to go broke because there is a bigger hole that is leaking than the oil in the Gulf, and that hole is the money that's flowing out of Washington, D.C. There's a gusher of funds that are being spent on a daily basis by those in Congress, and we need to plug that hole as well as plug the hole that's taking place in the Gulf. So those two things combined are causing our country to just spiral into this economic disaster that is taking place, and both of those two holes need to be plugged. Now, in the middle of most Americans feeling that way, that we're spending way too much, and that we need to be concentrating on just fixing the problem there in the Gulf, juxtaposed to that, the president then comes out, and not only does he not see plugging the economic hole as being an important thing, but he actually calls for more spending. And he starts calling for alternative energy solutions. And this is what has people so enraged today about the speech that went forth. I don't know if people recognize this, but here he was saying that he was there for the people of the Gulf, and he said he was going to hold the BP accountable, that he was going to force them to set up a fund that would take care of the folks there in the Gulf in Louisiana and so forth, that whose beaches have been ruined by this oil spill, that he was going to force them to set up an independent escrow account where billions of dollars would be put into this account. The problem is that does he really have any means of forcing a private company to do this? I'm not saying that BP doesn't have any liability. I'm just saying that the type of terminology, again, being used by the president, you know, is he overstepping his bounds here? Does he really think that he has an ability to force them to do this? They've already said that they're willing to do it. They're willing to far exceed the cap that was put on the amount of liability that a company would have for these types of things. But he's gone far beyond that, and he has tried to overly demonize BP for what has taken place. And in doing so, I don't think a lot of people understand the danger of doing this. You know that the livelihood of the people in the Gulf are tied to two things. There are three things. They're tied to tourism, it's tied to the fishing industry, and the third thing is it is tied to oil. That there is a tremendous amount, in fact, they're saying that because of his ban, his drilling ban that currently is in place, that 120,000 jobs are in jeopardy now in the Gulf Coast region because these key resources, if they're abandoned, if they're not allowed to drill there, they're going to move these resources to another area, off of another country, and 120,000 jobs are going to be lost in the Gulf. Now, you had the fishing industry that's been so damaged during, this is their harvest season, this is when they actually bring in the shrimp and the crab and the fish and these types of things. This has been ruined for this year. They're not getting anything out of this. Then their tourism is ruined, and now the last big industry that they have in this region, which is the oil industry, can be ruined by the president's knee-jerk reaction and over-response to this situation. So he needs to separate this out, you know, that there was a failure of a blowout valve that took place. So rather than demonizing the whole industry, rather than shutting everything down, let's just figure out how to fix and how to test these blowout valves, certify these things to make sure that they've been tested and they will work as they're supposed to. Let's work on other disaster recovery programs so that we can be able to pick up the oil if something like this were ever happened again. And then let's move on. Let's not overreact to the situation and then, you know, shut down. It'd be like getting in a somebody getting in a car crash and then say, well, that's it. Nobody can drive anymore. Or you have a plane crash and say, that's it. You know, we're not, nobody's going to fly anymore. No, you look at what the problem was. And if need be, if there's an industry-wide fix to the problem, you require the industry to make those changes, but you don't shut down the entire industry. So this is what's taking place. And I just think from a Christian perspective, we need to approach this in a reasonable manner, thinking through these issues in a very logical and reasonable manner, and then moving forward with some reasonable solutions. And I hope that takes place in our country today. We're facing a lot of big problems, but for the Christian, God is on the throne, God is sovereign, and God is ruling and reigning and everything that is taking place. And so we can look to Him and trust in Him and rest upon Him for His comfort and for His guidance in everything that we do. We're tomorrow on the broadcast, we're going to be talking with Dr. Gordon about his latest book, Why Johnny Can't Sing Hymns. I've had Dr. Gordon on the program before. We talked about why Johnny can't preach. Tomorrow, why Johnny can't sing hymns. Remember, the Lord Jesus Christ said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin.